Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Everybody is a Star. This is your favorite flavor, Patrice Chocolate Banks, and you are tuned into TribeFamilyChannel.com. We are live on Tribe. Now, I'm not going to waste much time tonight because my guest tonight has so much information that we need to get started as soon as possible. And he is an esteemed music journalist and dedicated his career to digging up gems from our music history, okay? And he is known as, I'm going to call him a musicologist, okay? So without further ado, welcome Justin Musicology Cantor. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Chocolate. How are you doing?
I am doing good. How are you doing? Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. I know you're busy.
I'm excited to be on the air with you and talking with such a talented person as yourself about what I do. It's a real honor.
Yay. Well, thank you so much. And, you know, we've been friends for a long time. I think the first time we got acquainted with one another was when I actually did an interview on your show, which was about how many years ago?
About 3 years ago now, yeah.
About three years ago?
Yeah, when you had your Deja Vu book out. Yeah, we did the interview about that. That was awesome. A highlight of my interviewing career.
So we have come full circle. So what mm-hmm. we're going to do is we're going to start at the beginning, okay? I like for people to know everything, as much about my guests as they are willing to tell, okay? So let's start from where you were born, where you came from.
Well, I'm from Virginia Beach, and I remember music being a part of my life from probably the time I was 2 years old. My mom often tells a story of my looking at the turntable, the record spinning on it, with eyes of amazement. You know, just what is this thing spinning around, emanating these wonderful sounds? And she's told me in the years since that when she was pregnant with me that one singer that she listened to all the time was Donna Summer, which would explain why she was my first favorite singer. I listened to her obsessively when I was growing up. So she's the first singer I remember having a really big impression on me when I was growing up.
Okay, so now let's go back. Let's rewind a little bit. I want you to shout out the schools that you went to. Did you go to school in Virginia Beach?
Yeah, I graduated from Kempsville High, so class of 97. So I did music stuff there. I was in the choir and All-City State Chorus and things like that. So music was part of me in a lot of ways, even in school. So that was a real fun time for me.
And that was very important that you were able to be a part of the fact that you were going to school at a time where music was still incorporated in the school. So, but we're going to go back to what you said about your mother saying mm-hmm. at 2 years old that music was fascinating you. Do you mm-hmm. remember that, or you just
I remember. I have a lot. I think a lot of my memories in life are based on songs, like where I was when I heard a certain song, even if it was an inconsequential moment, you know, just being in the car on the way home from preschool. Even I remember hearing Love Come Down by Evelyn Champagne King and really feeling the groove of that at such a young age, or a song like American Music by the Pointer Sisters, which was also out when I was like the preschool age. I remember singing that song in the garage of, you know, the home that we grew up in. And so it was just always in me. And, you know, I think that throughout most of my years in school, elementary up through high school, not that I didn't like the academics, because I certainly had great teachers and really enjoyed parts of school, but a lot of times I couldn't wait to get home and watch BET, which at that time they had fabulous programs like Video Soul and Video Vibrations, which I would watch religiously and just discover so much great music. I mean, so many wonderful artists like Stacey Ladislaw, Stephanie Mills. You know, again, at a very young age, I was really into that, when probably a lot of my peers might have been watching MTV more, but I always had a special affinity for soul music and R&B. And even, you know, at that time, acts that weren't as well known, like one of the first groups I remember really liking was a group called Shades of Lace, which, you know, is a really talented female R&B.
What was the group called?
Shades of Lace. They are a female R&B group, and they had this song called My Love Is Deep that was produced by a guy named Lionel Job, you know, who's produced a lot of great records like for Starpoint over the years. So I always would just soak that up, and I'm very fortunate, you know, that my parents realized what an affinity I had for music, because my dad, on the weekends, you know, when he wasn't working, he would take me to record stores, and he would hang around while I kind of browsed through the racks and tried to find the records of these videos that I was seeing, and, you know, even stuff like doing voice lessons and piano lessons at a young age. That was something I got to do, you know, and a lot of times you hear about parents not really believing that the arts are something worth kind of dedicating yourself to for a career, but they always really let me indulge in my passion for it and pursue it from the beginning.
Now, see, I think that is awesome. And and it's now Virginia Beach, I don't know a lot about Virginia Beach, but what I think is awesome is the fact that now here you are, like you said, most of your friends were listening to MTV and I don't know what maybe a radio station they were listening to. But for some reason, maybe it was because of your mom, because you said that you remember that she would play Donna Summers all the time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have always, like, been attracted and drawn to black music.
Yeah. And another thing that's interesting is that my dad had a business, which is totally unrelated to music, but through some of the relationships that he had with other businesses for advertising, he was in touch with people at a radio station, a local radio station called 103 Jams, which is still around. And at the time, I think it was called WOWI, and it was and still as an R&B music station. And I remember as a kid getting to go there when I was really young several times and seeing the DJs putting on the records and meeting a couple artists there, like Tyler Collins, an R&B singer that I really liked a lot growing up. I got to meet her. And so I just seem to be surrounded by it. And it really, I just think the emotional truthfulness of a lot of R&B music really struck a chord with me. And not to say that I didn't enjoy other styles, you know, of pop music, but I think a lot of what I like has always had some sort of soulful quality to it, either in the arrangements or in the vocal delivery. So, you know, and I had, fortunately, you know, some friends who enjoyed that as well, and some of my teachers who appreciated that, like my choir teacher, her name is Ms. Tolliver. She still teaches in this area. And so it was just something that was always there, and there was never any question about it, just how much I loved it.
So, well, you know, we We are who we are, and you know you got to call a thing a thing. So if that music was calling to you, it was something inside of you that was connected to it, and that was what was supposed to happen. I find it very interesting, though, that your family was so supportive of it. Now, do you have siblings?
Yes, I have a younger sister, Melanie. Hey, Melanie. And she also, actually, it's funny because right now she's studying guitar. And she never really had looked at pursuing music as a career, but she always had the appreciation for it, too. And I think even though I don't come from a family with a background in show business or pursuing it professionally, you know, my mom just always had a love for music growing up. You know, she was... you know, would tell me stories about going to see James Brown in concert when she was a teenager, and Otis Redding, and just a lot of these great artists. And this is even, you know, she grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina, you know, and these were in the days of segregation still. And so, you know, she has some stories from that. So I think that in that way, she, her history influenced me, and it was just in my blood, you know, just kind of appreciating.
Now that is awesome. Now mm-hmm. your mom went to go see James Brown and Otis Redding in mm-hmm. North Carolina. In North Carolina.
Yeah, and she, you know, she actually mentioned to me that Otis Redding, I unfortunately, you know, they didn't let him go through with the show because they thought the crowd was too riotous or whatever. You know, it was just racial, you know, injustice really going on, but. You know,
right.
she, just as much as she loved the Beatles, she's to this day an avid Beatles fan, but she, just as much she loved seeing James Brown. I know she went to have one occasion, I don't know if it was just her, but she saw Dionne Warwick in concert, you know, who's another artist who's become a favorite of mine over the years. So, I mean, just, I guess, you know, as I'm talking with you about it, I realize how much of her experience kind of probably was embedded in me without my even knowing it, you know, and how it translated to my appreciation and love of soul and R&B music.
Absolutely, because your mama sounded like she was fly. She,
yeah.
she sounded like she was like, you know, not, you know, she was like not operating in the norm. She was operating out of the box, and she was doing, because to go see Otis Redding back in, what, this was probably
early,
back in 19, what, four?
Early
year,
to mid 60s,
year, I don't know.
Like 63, 64 around then.
Like
mm-hmm.
in the 50s, okay. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to go to concerts back in those days, because those concerts were segregated, because white people were in one area, black
mm-hmm.
people were in another area. They were not allowed to, you know, sit together and all of that. And so just to be able to go to a concert like that, knowing that all this was going on, but still you were so into the artist that you didn't even care about that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. You asked me about Virginia Beach, and I don't think that the locale itself is so much necessarily a part of the story of the music I love, but what I can say is that, you know, it's kind of a conservative area. It's not known for being as progressive as, say, California, where you have the good fortune of living. But, you know, my mom always, one of her priorities in life has been equality. And she was an English teacher for a long time before she had me. And, you know, she would tell me stories about teaching during that time when it was still segregated and how she learned so much from the African-American students that she worked with in the high school that she was at and how she would encounter various problems because, you know, not all teachers necessarily felt that way. And so I just think that kind of also is an underlying current, you know, of maybe how the music has the soul to it that it does. It speaks to me and so many other people regardless of their race.
Right. So, mm-hmm. We discussed how I guess we'll call it soul music for right now. When you were small, we'll call it soul music, how it actually did reach your soul. So how, but did you, do you remember, like, how you felt when you would hear this music as opposed to other music, you know, like maybe the Beatles or whatever? What was it about, you know, soul music, black music, R&B music, whatever you want to call it, that you think that connected with what was inside of you? It was it the way it made you feel?
Yeah, I think that when I think about a lot of the artists that I listened to a lot growing up, like the Pointer Sisters, or even going to my first concert, which was Whitney Houston on my 9th birthday, I think about the positive energy of the arrangements and the songs. Again, I use the phrase emotionally truthfulness in the vocals, and also the melodies have a brightness to them that really just resonates with my soul. Even if it's a sad song, you know, I just think that there's a real feeling that the people that are singing these songs have lived it, what they're singing about, and that they're really storytellers, and they're not just singing random lines, even if they didn't write the song themselves. You know, I just think that combination of the melody and the rhythm and the voices, you know, it's all part of the puzzle. I don't think that you can really separate one aspect and say it's more important than the other. I mean, so many great arrangers in the history of soul music, you know, whether it be someone like Norman Whitfield, or going back to Holland, Dozier Holland, whose role in it is just as important as the amazing vocalists like Aretha, or I mean, Diana, or, you know, whoever it is, and the songwriters. I mean, I think it all just comes together and really speaks to the soul. I mean, I don't want to overuse the word, but it really...
Well, that's all right. You just go ahead and use that word, because
yeah.
what other word is there to use? Now, did I hear you say that you went to go see Whitney Houston when you were 9 years old?
Yeah, and the awesome thing about that, again, it shows you how cool my parents are, is that was a birthday present. She was actually appearing here on my 9th birthday, and, you know, this was before really kind of Ticketmaster and all that was the big thing, and so my dad, I know, went very early in the morning before work to wait outside to get tickets for this concert, because, you know, this was 1987, so, you know, she was huge at that point. It was like her second album was out. And, you know, he had to wait quite a while. I didn't have to sleep out overnight, but he had to wait a couple hours. And we got third row seats, so you can imagine for me, because I have to tell you, I mean, for example, her recording of The Greatest Love of All, I mean, I don't know who in the world it didn't affect in some way, because it was such an inspirational song of so many. But for a while, no matter what family function we went to, whether I was at a cousin's house or a camp, I always had to find a way to stop what was going on and sing that song for everybody. I was just so into it. And so to see her in concert, you know, it was actually overwhelming, because I had never been to it, and it was like a big stadium concert. And I remember at the time it was so loud, I actually had to go out for a little bit. Like, I was crying from the volume, because I just wasn't used to it. And, you know, it's funny, as much as I love music, I have very sensitive ears, and, you know, I'm not someone who really blasts music, you know, but that's another point. But it's just that, you know, the experience was just so awesome to just be there witnessing her live and really make that connection, because having already grown up listening to records so much of my childhood, you know, at that point, to kind of make the connection, she's really real. She's not just on the TV screen. She's here, and she's singing these songs that I love. It was just the best gift I could really ask for.
And you know what? And that's just, to me, that's just so special, because you were, like, exposed to this music at such a young age. You were 9 years old when you saw Whitney Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's something that you will never forget, and so many people would have loved to have done and never probably, you know, could do for whatever reasons to go see Whitney Houston
mm-hmm.
live. So just your experiences have been awesome. Okay, so now let's go back. Let's go back to when you graduated from high school, okay? You tell me, you know, when you decided what it was that you wanted to do and how did you go about pursuing it?
Well, I think it was around the time that I was 13 that I decided I wanted to be a professional singer, and that was my goal. But in the meantime, what happened is that an affiliate of my dad's, another like kind of connection he had through his business, said, you know, your son is so passionate about music, he should put out some sort of publication about the music that he likes, and he should write about it. And literally one day I was home, sick from school. I guess I wasn't too sick if I was able to do this, but I you know what, I really should make good on what he said. I should really try this. And I said, you know, I want to try to write my own music magazine. And so that, when I was in middle school, was kind of the birth of what ended up being my path in music as far as music journalism, because I started a music magazine called The Hip Key, and it was originally very humble in its beginnings, a handwritten publication. You know, I tell you, I was just so blessed in so many ways. People at my dad's job would help me making copies of it. And, you know, it kind of evolved. I did it for a total of 4 years, and it eventually got to the point where I worked with a professional agency on designing it, and we had a circulation going of about 10,000 copies per issue. I would put one out about every 2 months. And I wrote reviews about, on average, about 100 each issue of all kinds of music, like the singles and albums that were coming out. Of course, there was a big emphasis on R&B, since, as we discussed, that has had such an impact on me. But it also covered pop, jazz, reggae, country, you name it. And eventually got other people to contribute reviews. And that was really sort of, you know, I know you asked me specifically about graduating from high school, but that was just such an important part of sort of the evolution to where I am now, because that was where I learned so much. Like, I was just doing this on my own. You know, I didn't have any experience in it. I was fortunate that my dad could help me in terms of connections of distributing the magazine, but I would just cold call record companies, you know, to set up interviews with artists because I wanted to get some good stories in there, and I would, you know, try to get them to send me product. You know, it's a very different world now in some ways now as far as doing something like that. But it was very educational for me, and it's something that stayed with me because it really taught me how to translate what I love, music, and make it into something that I can be productive with in my life and share it with others and hopefully be, you know, make a, at the same time, a financially stable career out of it, which I'm still working on because, as you know, the business of music is not one that you really get into make a lot of money. But that was kind of where I was at through a lot of my high school, was just working on that magazine. And so throughout doing that, I still have the goal of performing. And so I applied to Berklee College of Music, amongst other schools. And as soon as we visited that school, I thought, this is the one I want to go to. It just felt right. I thought, you know, because growing up here, as I said, I did have a few friends that appreciated the music I did, but in a lot of ways I felt like an outsider because I wasn't into sports really, and I wasn't mainstream in some ways. It, you know, it was kind of a more of a specialized thing maybe for a white kid with this passion for R&B music and being so into
definitely.
It.
And, definitely.
You know, especially that time. And so I think that when I visited Berkeley, I thought, wow, this is somewhere where I could go, that I could be around people who understand me and I understand them. We're about the music. We live it and breathe it. And so fortunately, I was accepted there, and I went into their music business and management program with the idea of doing that as my backup for a performing career. But it was just a wonderful experience in so many ways. And just tell me if I'm jumping ahead too much, because it kind of all, you know, bleeds together. But
what I did want to ask you is when you first started doing this magazine, handwriting it, who were you giving it to? Because you were in high school at the time, right?
The first two issues were handwritten. Yeah, I would just, it was very small at that point. I literally would walk around the offices of my dad's business and, you know, try to sell it to people. And it was like for a dollar, you know, and it was a Xerox publication. And that was the beginnings of it. And then I think after a couple, I realized we had a typewriter at home. So I did the next one on the typewriter, same thing. And then, you know, we had a computer, you know, and so I started doing it on there. Very primitive by today's means, for sure. No fancy applications. But that's when, at that point, so that was about 4 or 5 issues into it, I started taking the copies to local record stores. There's a store that's still around, which is great, called DJ's Music and Video in Norfolk, which is, you know, right next to Virginia Beach. And that was, I think, the first store I took it to. Another one, Birdland. You know, it's amazing that these two stores are still here, because you always hear about there's no record stores anymore, but they are still here. Birdland, a record store that I bought so many of the records that I loved growing up. I took them there, and I said, can you just let people pick these up, put them out with the other free publications? And that's kind of how it started.
Wow. You had reached a circulation of 10,000 by the time you were 16.
Yeah, it took a couple of years to get to that point, but eventually, with help of friends, you know, we started. I mean, we did it all. It wasn't like we had some distribution company or something, but we were literally, like, when I got my license, I would start driving around to the malls, going to clothing stores, any specialty stores, asking them, hey, is there any way you can put this out? And I think just being able to then say that I had that circulation allowed me to really take the magazine to another level and do my first artist interviews, which interestingly at that time, the interviews I got weren't so much R&B artists. The first, big name interviews I had were like with Cyndi Lauper and Laura Branigan, you know, who are real pop legends. But, you know, it still for me was a real thrill. And, it just kind of expanded from there. And I think it was a really great time. I got some coverage in the local newspaper and, you know, got to do a few TV things related to it, you know, like on local public TV and stuff like that. So it was real exciting for me. I really had a fun time. I mean, because you can't really complain when you're getting to, like, spend a lot of your time writing about something you love and sharing it with people and getting good feedback. You know, it was hard work. I put in a lot of hours. I certainly sacrificed a lot of social time to do it, but I really couldn't care less, honestly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what you do. When you follow your passion, you know, that's what you do. I mean, you know, it takes you where it wants you to go. You know what I'm saying? And so you just have to follow your passion. It basically, so social time and all that, you know, because when I was young, I didn't have much of a social life either, because I was busy, you know, like getting around town locally, like, I was like 14 and 15. So we have some calls for you. And we're going to take a couple of calls. And then we have a list of songs that you submitted as being some of your favorites. And out of your lifetime of collecting and studying, I just have to know why these songs you submitted, what it is about these songs in particular out of a lifetime that you love about them. But before we get into that, we're
okay.
going to take a call from area code 305. Caller
okay.
from area code 305, are you there? Hello, 305? Okay.
I wonder if they're away from the home, the phone.
They've been waiting for a while, so they might
okay.
have disconnected. So, but we have another one from area code 646.
Okay.
Area code 646. See, they've been calling, but I've been making them wait because I want to hear what you had to say.
So, I thank you.
Area code 646. Caller, are you there? Okay, they might have disconnected too. So we have one more. Let's try them. Area
okay.
code 6. Area code 661.
Hello, this is Robbie Danzy. How are you?
Yay!
Hey, how are you? It's so great to hear
I'm
from
wonderful.
You.
I'm wonderful. I want to say thank you, first of all, to Patrice Chocolate Banks for your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you calling in, Robbie. Where are you calling from?
Well, actually, I'm calling from Singapore.
Get out of here. You know what? Singapore is one of my favorite places in the whole wide world, and I mean that.
It's amazing here. It's definitely very peaceful. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful country. So I'm
and
happy
you know
to be
what
here.
Else? It's one of the cleanest places I've ever been to in my life.
The same with me. It is definitely, it is the cleanest that I've ever been
to. Because they will find you. They will find you. I saw signs up saying, you know, they were serious about keeping their city clean. It's like you will get fined $1,000 if you throw a piece of gum on the street.
Wow.
But anyway, what did you, you're calling to talk to Justin. So what
right.
is your
well,
question or comment?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to you, first of all, for having this amazing music journalist and fabulous person, friend of mine. He's a fabulous person. So I'm very happy that you have him on your show, and I wanted to make sure I was supporting the show as best I could. And I wanted to ask, thank you, Justin, and I want to say hello to you from the girls of Crystal, Tina Scott, Roberta Stigger-Taylor now. We're saying hi to you. And I wanted to ask if you would share your perspective of the music industry as it is today, from where it's come in terms of business and or, you know, just from the music perspective, maybe R&B, that genre of music, where it has come from, where it is, what your thoughts are on it. And just thank you so much for loving the music of Crystal and so many other artists. I'm so glad that we were able to touch your soul because you've certainly made a wonderful impact on our lives as artists and as well as people. So thank you so much for all the love you give us all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I have to say, Chocolate, I don't know if you're familiar with Robbie, but she has sung lead with the group Crystal over the years, and they're one of my favorite groups and actually
okay.
responsible for a lot of my passion for interviews in recent years. But to answer your question, Robbie, I think that over the last two decades, the main change I've noticed from a business standpoint is sort of the consolidation in terms of the mergers that we've seen with the major labels. And I think in some ways that has limited our choices more as far as the music we're exposed to. But more slowly, but surely, it's also opened new doors in terms of independent artists who have not previously had doors open to them to express themselves with the kinds of authentic music that they might want to present to the public. Of course, they have forums now to present their music that weren't available to them in the past. Even for myself as a journalist, you know, I have to say that, for example, the miracle of social networking with Facebook and whatnot. It just opened so many doors for me in terms of connecting with artists and realizing how many artists are out there. Maybe they've been around a long time. I didn't realize they were still active, but they're doing things in their city or in their niche of the business, whether it's making records or doing jingles or, doing corporate functions. I just think that there's a lot, even though things have consolidated a lot, I think it's opening new doors and making a lot more visibility possible for a lot of a broader scope of artists. And we may not be seeing them in the mass media and being exposed to them at large all the time, but I think the good thing is that if we have the a little patience to seek them out, we can find a lot of quality music that is being offered out there.
And as long as we have musicologists like you out there, then we don't have anything to worry about, right, Crystal?
Yes, most definitely.
So, Crystal, what are you doing right now? Tell me briefly about what you have going on right now and how we can connect with you and your new projects or whatever. The name of your group is?
The group name is Crystal, K-R-Y-S-T-O-L. And my name is Robbie Danzy. We're a three-girl group. We're still together. We're still planning to do things. And, in fact, I'm in Singapore singing right now. I'm on a contract here for a few months, so I'll be here. But I do want to say the main thing I'm doing right now, I'm an artist manager, and I manage unsigned, independent artists, and two of them are on tour right now with a tour called Truth Be Sold. And they're going to be in Atlanta. They've just done Oakland. They're going to be in Atlanta on Thursday, December the 12th, and they're going to be in St. Louis, December 15th. Then they go back to L.A. after that. So it's a mini tour, promo tour. So that's what I'm working on most earnestly right now is promoting unsigned artists, independent artists. So that was why I was really, really curious about your perspective as well, Patrice, on where we are with our artists right now, where we need to be taking them, how can we get them to a more prominent level in this industry, so that people can hear this broad spectrum of great artists. That's me in a nutshell. Sorry, it's so much.
No, yeah. Hey, Chocolate, Robbie is another artist who I did an in-depth interview with for the same site that I interviewed you for, Blog Critics. Actually, it was around the same time that I did a two-part interview with Robbie. The first part was about her musical history, and the second part was about the business aspect that she's talking about her management firm, Prodigy, and some of the other ventures she's been involved in.
Right. Well, Robbie, listen, you sound like you are out there doing it, girl. If you have people signed up and you have them out there on, they're out there playing dates and doing things and you're promoting them, I mean, it sounds to me like you have a pretty firm grasp on what to do. But I would like to talk to you further about this, but I'll have to make sure that you and I connect after the show because I have about five people waiting to speak to Justin.
Okay.
But I would love to talk to you about that. And I just want to tell you, girl, you better go ahead on and do your thing and keep doing it, okay?
And Rob,
bless you both. Thank you both. I love you, Justin.
I send you all my love.
Yes, baby. Okay, bye.
Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you, Patrice.
All right, talk to you soon.
Okay, we'll do. Okay.
All right. All right, so we have the people that hung up, they came back, Justin, cool. They came back. So we're going to go to caller from 646, area code 646. Caller, are you there? Area code 646. Okay. Area code 305, are you there? All right. So while they're trying to get that together, what we're going to do is we're going to play this first song that you submitted, Justin,
okay.
Trying to Get Through by Billy Ocean. Now, why did you pick that song, Trying to Get Through?
This is one of those songs that's a real mood song for me. It's actually written and produced by Billy himself. It's from an album he did called Inner Feelings from 1982. This was a couple years before he really hit a huge, like with Caribbean Queen and all of those hits that we have come to love him for. Billy Ocean was really the first male vocalist that really spoke to me. I mentioned a lot of female vocalists that I grew up admiring, but he was really the first male vocalist. There's just something about the sensitivity in his voice. There's a robust passion, yet a tenderness in it that I really, it just resonates with me. And I think this song just really captures that so well. You know, it's kind of a song about being in a state of limbo in love and not being clear on where it's going. And I think he evokes that so well in this song. So it's one of my favorites of his.
So this song speaks to you, okay? And when after this song plays, we will go back to our callers, okay? But in the meantime, we're getting ready to listen to I'm going to let you introduce the song. Go ahead, Justin.
Okay. This is Billy Ocean with Trying to Get Through to You.
Trying to Get Through to You.
Time you show, I keep holding back.
That was an excellent choice, Justin. I like that. When I heard
it,
when you said it, I said, Billy was singing that one.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
trying to get through to you. Yeah,
yeah.
I understand why you chose that. Okay, so we have a caller from area code 954. Area code 954. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yay! So who would you be, and what would your name be, and where are you calling from?
My name is Brandon Rhett. I'm calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I wanted to give a shout-out to Justin.
Hey, Brandon.
Hey, I called.
Nice to talk with you. Well, I know Brandon from online for a long time, but this is the first time we've actually talked on the phone, so thank you, Chocolate, for hooking us
up. Okay. Cool. So, Brandon, do you have a question or a comment?
I do actually have a comment. I just wanted to thank Justin for inspiration because I am a student as well. I'm going for broadcast at FIU, and I'm about, endorsing artists, through radio because I have a radio show as well. So, I am very inspired by Justin, the way he interviews individuals and whatnot, and I want to do the same thing. So, I'm truly inspired.
Wow, thank you so much. I appreciate that. It's good to hear. And, I mean, it's great that it's inspiring for me, too, because, I know a lot of people, our age or younger. I think you're actually considerably younger than me, but, don't always have the knowledge of some of the real great music, and I can always tell how much you're in tune with that and really how much respect you have for the great artists. So I think it's awesome to hear that from you.
And you're from what part of Florida again, I'm sorry?
I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
And so did you say that you're doing you're following in Justin's footsteps, basically?
Yes.
Okay. So are you doing interviews and stuff at a radio station?
No, not yet. I'm going to be doing that soon. I just started about 2 months ago.
How do you like it?
I love it. It's very fun.
Good.
Yeah, radio
is
awesome. That's great that you have that experience. I'd like to learn more about that at some point, so you have to keep me posted on how that goes.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for calling in and speaking to Justin, and keep doing what you are doing. Keep that funk alive, okay? Okay.
Thanks for calling, Brandon. Good to talk to you.
All right, bye.
All right, let's see, who can we, let's try area code 646 again, because I understand that they are still holding on, so let's see if they want to come on. Area code 646, are you there? Okay, so we'll get back to them. Now, Justin, you have interviewed more than 150 singers, songwriters, producers, and musicians. 150. Over, how long did it take you to do that? Over what the period
it's been
of time?
Over a long time. I mean, my cumulative years as a journalist have been about 17. So, it's not been a short time. It's been over a long time, but I've enjoyed every one of them. I mean, it's just been an awesome experience to interview so many talented people and really kind of learn more about the craft of interviewing and really getting to show the best of so many great singers and producers and writers as well, as you said.
Okay, so I'm not going to ask you who some of your favorite interviews were. I'm just going to ask you, which ones, out of all of those, which ones are the most memorable? You know, tell us a few stories about, and, you know, and let's keep it real. You know what I'm saying? Everybody is not wonderful and kind and sweet mm-hmm. and all that. Some people get on your nerves when you interview them. You know what I'm saying? Some people, you know what I'm saying? So give me a couple of stories about people that you've interviewed and what you thought about it.
You know, one interview that really stands out to me, I did with two songwriters, Curtis Hudson and Lisa Stevens, and they're actually the songwriters responsible for the song Holiday, which was Madonna's first huge hit.
Launched
her career. And, you know, they at the time were in a group called Pure Energy, and they were a soulful dance group signed to a small label called Prism Records, and they'd have a few songs out that made some noise in the club. And interestingly, they presented this song Holiday to their label, who told them, this is not a hit, you know, we're not going to release it. And in the meantime, Jellybean Benitez, famed DJ from New York, they had connections with him through the clubs, and he approached them for a song, so they presented Holiday, and he was looking for a song for Madonna because she was recording her first album. And so it ended up that she recorded it, and Curtis did a lot of the arrangements on the song. He didn't really get a production credit. He just got his musician credit, but he actually did a lot of the he's responsible for a lot of what you hear on that recording. And, you know, that's the song that really that was what exposed the world to Madonna. And, you know, here we are 30 years later, and, you know, she's still a force to be reckoned with. So it was just fascinating for me to speak with them, because so often when you have a megastar like Madonna, you forget about the other players involved, because she's been involved.
Let me just interject this. Not only the other players, but the main players, because, you know, an artist is only as good as what they're doing right now. People want to know what you're doing right now. And so mm-hmm. those songwriters who write those hits for these people, you know, without the songs, you know what I'm saying, there are no artists, you know what I'm saying? You got to have a song, you know. And so to write that song, Holiday, for her, that's what really launched her career. And what did you say their names were again?
It's Curtis Hudson and Lisa Stevens. And actually, Curtis has a son, Eric Hudson, who's a very successful producer now. He's produced records on Mary J. Blige and Jamie Foxx, a lot of great people. So talent really runs in that family. They're just awesome people, too. I really had a delightful time talking with them.
Very humble people.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No ego, you know. Curtis is still a working musician. Lisa's done records of her own over the years, too. But, you know, just real people. And I think being a songwriter, because, you know, in recent years I've talked to a lot of songwriters, I think that gives you a different perspective sometimes than being an artist in the limelight, because you don't get a lot of recognition a lot of the time. So, you know, you kind of the unsung, if you will, force
behind
music. So, yeah, awesome. As far as artists, one particularly memorable interview I did was with Alicia Myers, who most people know either for her classic recording of I Want to Thank You, or for her recording with One Way as You Can Do It. A wonderful singer. I had such a fun time interviewing her. She comes from a family of nine. She...
And that's that song of I Want to Thank You, Heavenly
that's,
Father.
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Her.
Okay.
Yeah. She comes from a family of nine, and it was just fun talking with her about her beginnings, how she had a lot of stage fright, how her family kind of encouraged her to go into performing at talent shows, but it was something she wrestled with. And, you know, she's one of those people that people know her for that song. She had another one called You Get the Best of Me, which is also a big hit for her. But she disappeared for a long time. And, you know, she went back to school. She got a regular job for a long time because she had some, unfortunately, some financial troubles from that resulted from her production deal that she had at the time. And on top of that, she is a breast cancer survivor. And she just put out her first album in over two decades just last year. So it's always wonderful to see someone with such a distinctive voice as hers, you know, who you thought was just gone from the scene, to see them resurface and be doing well. And she even appeared on LL Cool J's last album. She guested on one of the tracks on there. So it was just a thrill. I love speaking with artists who, you know, people know their songs, but they might not always, you know, their name recognition isn't always there like it should
right.
be.
And,
right. Just a very great personality, too. I had a great time doing that interview.
And, okay, let's see. I know that you also interviewed Rebe Jackson, right?
Oh, yeah, Rebe. She's great.
Yeah.
And I know she worked with her as well, so we have that kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, I did.
Connection there. Yeah, really, that was fun because, you know, a lot of times the interviews I do are by phone, but that was one of the few that I have the chance to do in person. I was living in New York at the time, and I found out that she was doing a show in Vegas, and I had never been to Vegas. I always loved Rebe's music. I always thought, you know, she's very underrated in terms of the Jackson family. You know, a lot of times people forget about her. And I said, you know what, I really want to go see this show, and it'll be a good excuse for me to go somewhere I haven't been before. So I managed to get in touch with some of her representatives, and I went out to see the show and interview her afterwards. You know, it's funny because a lot of times people talk about the Jackson family, about the personal dramas and kind of maybe lack of reality with some respects. But, you know, she is just the most down-to-earth person. It was so funny. You know, I saw her show, and I literally was escorted a few minutes later up to her suite that she was staying at and interviewing her on the couch. She's in her bathrobe, you know, she had showered after the show, and, you know, just having a nice, like, hour-long conversation about her beginnings dancing with her brother Jackie, you know, when they were really young. This is before, you know, the Jackson 5, long before that happened, and talking about how she got into the music with help from great people like Betty White. And I think one of the emotions, I think it was Wanda Hutchinson. I'm not sure if it was Wanda or Sheila, but just a delight and a real distinctive voice. I think, you know, she has a really special style. I've seen her perform a few times, and she's a very engaging performer. She's got a natural dancing style about her that's all her own. So, yeah, I was thrilled to interview her.
And also, you're right, I did work on her album, on her album project. Wayne Henderson was the producer, and myself and a young man named Gary Glenn, who wrote hits for people like Anita Baker. He's my friend, and I brought him in on the project, and we did background vocals on like two or three of Rebe's songs, and we tow it up, especially... once she did Read Makeup, A Fork in the Road.
I know.
And,
yeah, that was
and that's one of my favorites. And one thing I do have to say about Rebe is she was always so sweet and so down to earth. That's what I really liked about her. She was not affected at all. She was just sweet and down to earth. And being honest, she wasn't, you know, one of the, you know, she couldn't sing like Michael, but then who could? But she had that natural Jackson talent, and what she could do, She did do it well, and she was just so sweet, and it was a pleasure to be able to work on her project.
And
so,
you know, what a small world it is. Robbie Danzy, who called in earlier, she sang background on Rebe's second album on a song she had out called Reaction. So that's kind of fun. I mean, it just shows you how it's all circle, you know, a lot of it's great talent.
Okay. So, oh, there's so much stuff. So we have another caller.
Okay.
Caller, area code 909. Are you there, caller? 909?
Yes, I am.
Yay. I think I know who this is.
Hi.
Hi. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Zelda, and I'm calling from Pomona.
Oh, hey, Zelda.
Hi, Justin. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear you, too.
You got a question or a comment, Captain Z?
Yes, I do. Justin, I really wanted to know, do you still have aspirations to sing? Also, do you have any words of wisdom you'd like to give to up-and-coming or, you know, inspiring music journalists?
Well, to answer your first question, I still love singing. I don't know about pursuing a profession at this point just because of where I'm at in my life, but I have to say, and a lot of people might be surprised by this, and you know, it's a little amusing, but I have pet birds, and they're like my most captive audience when it comes to my singing because they just love when I sing to them. So, like, right now, you know, when I'm kind of focused on the writing and spending all my energy on that, the only time I really get to sing is when I'm at home, and I'll sing for them and they love it. So that's enough for me. As long as I can sing, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm on a stage or whatnot, but it'll always
right.
be something that I enjoy. It's just a release for me. But as far as advice for music journalists, aspiring music journalists, you know, like a lot of things, I wish I could say it in a way that's not cliched, but I think that persistence is the number one thing, because I think any aspect of the music industry, from my experience, you have to deal with a lot of rejection, and people don't always get back to you when they say they're going to. Like 90% of the time, they don't actually. And, you know, it's a real kind of numbers game. I mean, there's just it's so many people kind of vying for a spot in a really kind of, I don't know, small pond. I don't know if I'm saying it the right way, but it's just you deal with a lot of rejection and you kind of have to be willing to try different angles. So, you know, if you don't have success trying to get in with a magazine, you might try looking at another kind of website or a blog, that you might even look at it from the angle of writing for some sort of professional journal. You know, there's just a lot of different angles you can come at it from, but you have to be real creative and enterprising, and I think that takes a lot of persistence.
So, Zelda, so can we expect a project from you here in the near future?
I am starting my funk blog in January.
Mm, nice.
Okay. All right. And do
you
we know what
the name of it yet?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
What is the name of the funk blog?
It's going to be called The Funk Is Here to Stay.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that.
I like that. That's cute.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, I know one thing. I know one thing. You are the last of those who you are a funkative with a capital F, okay? That wherever the funk is, Zelda Norwood is there, okay? Let that be known. And she's also the captain of Team Chocolate also. Let me just say that, too.
Yeah. She's awesome. She's a very wise woman as well. She has lots of good insights on many aspects of life, as evidenced by her Facebook feed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just like the fact that she, wherever the funk is, that's where she is. That's, you know what I'm saying? And that's the last of a dying breed. So we want you to keep that alive, okay, Zelda?
Definitely, definitely.
And I know you will. And thank you so much for calling us tonight. We appreciate
thank you.
It.
Thanks,
okay,
Jennifer.
You guys have a good one. I'm still listening.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay.
All right. So, Justin, what we're going to do now is we're going to go to another song that you submitted called The Sweetest Thing by
okay.
Randy Crawford. By Randy
mm-hmm.
Crawford. So now, why did you choose this one?
You know, I wanted to pick something that was a little bit more recent. It's not new. It's from 2001. But Randy Crawford is a one-of-a-kind vocalist. I don't think you can compare her to anyone else. I mean, she's just got a signature all her own. What she does with the vibrato in her voice, with her phrasing, you always know it's her when you hear it, but somehow it's never quite the same because each song she does, whether it's been done a million times by other artists or whether it's never been done before, she makes it all her own. And The Sweetest Thing is just one of those really feel-good songs. I mean, I love songs that just I think a lot of times it's great just if you have a nice lighthearted song that just kind of, if you're feeling a little bit blah, you know, that just kind of picks your mood up. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a really deep lyrical message. It might be a simple love song as in this case. And that's what it is. It's written and produced by a guy named Pete Smith, from London, I believe, and it was on an album. It was actually the last kind of R&B pop album she's done to date called Play Mode from 2001. And this is just my favorite song from that album.
And what I like about Randy is when you hear her, you know exactly who she is. That's what I like.
Oh, yeah.
She's a stylist, and that's what I appreciate about, you know, different artists that have their own style. When you hear them, you know who they are. So here we go, Randy Crawford.
All right.
like that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, that always brings a smile on my face when I hear that.
Yeah, that was a good one. So now we have another caller from area code 909. Caller 909, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Justin. This is Tina from Crystal.
Hey, Tina, how are you?
How are you, honey? I'm so glad to hear you on the radio. This is great.
it's great to hear from you.
Yeah, I really sound really bad, but I wanted to call in and tell you and everybody know how much of a help you have been to Crystal all these years, and you never gave up on us, and you always had our music out there for everybody to hear. You posted videos on YouTube, and it was such a pleasure to meet and finally talk with you, and everybody know you keep the funk alive, you keep the R&B alive, and everybody that knows you and has spoken with you and interview with you, you know, have always had nothing but positive and great things to say about you.
Well,
and you are just the best. I always say that to you at the end of our conversations or emails. You're the best.
I have to say, because Chocolate, as you notice now, Tina's the second member from Crystal call-in. And Crystal has played such an important role in my sort of evolution as a journalist, because I even sort of have an online alias, Crystal fan. And just for those who don't know, I mean, they started as a quartet, eventually were a trio, but they released four really great albums in the 80s on Epic Records. And unfortunately, they didn't really always get the promotion that they deserved, but they just had such great material that I felt was really cutting edge, that kind of was a precursor even to En Vogue in some of the 90s. Female groups, and you know, they worked with awesome people like Leon Silvers, Randy Jackson, you know, pre-American Idol, you know, each vocalist in the group is an entity unto herself. And when I was at Berkeley, even, and I think I told you this before, Tina, but one of my classes was Principles of Business Management, and I remember I used Crystal as an example in one of my papers that I had to write about changing trends in the industry. So I just had to throw that in there to say, you know, they really have had an impact on me, and they really were kind of a catalyst for my sort of theme of underrated soul, which is something that I've done for the last 12 years in terms of trying to make sure I interview those artists that have large bodies of work out there but don't always get the visibility, but they are just off the chain, and you know, they still sound awesome. So I just had to let people know that. So
and plus he was instrumental in getting the re-release of our first album was re-released on CD, in which consequently followed up with the next two albums after that. And, you know, Justin promoted us really big, and we had a resurgence of Crystal. Now everybody's back on, you know, back wanting to Crystal do a reunion. And when we do, Justin's going to be in the front.
I'm excited.
Hey, it sounds like you guys need to hire him to be your manager.
He's going to be the PR guy. We've already decided.
I heard that. As soon as the show is over, I'm about to go on YouTube and listen to every Crystal song that's on YouTube.
And tell them, and it's spelled KrystoL.
OL. Okay.
KrystoL. Yeah, that's us.
Right.
We were like what Justin's saying, we were like the precursor before En Vogue. And
right.
We only had one video, and it was from a song that I had written called Precious Precious, but it's kind of hard to find. I mean, it's on iTunes and all that kind of stuff, but as far as videos go, we did Soul Train a couple of times, but a lot of the clips get pulled. We don't know why, but they're, you know.
Yeah.
But we did a couple of appearances on Soul Train, and we have a video out, but for some reason, the albums are up, but not the videos, and we don't know why. But but you can buy.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what.
You can buy Precious on iTunes and stuff. You can do that.
Okay, that's great. Well, I'm gonna tell you what. Keep doing what you are doing. I don't care where it is. If it's not on iTunes, wherever it is, whatever's happening with your other member called from Singapore. So apparently. you guys are going to roll till the wheels fall off. So I want you to keep doing what you're doing. And as long as you have Justin, and as long as you have Justin on your team, you can't ask for anything more. Okay?
I absolutely agree.
Well,
thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
I'm so glad you called, Tina. Great to hear from you.
Okay. We love
talk
you.
Talk to you soon.
Love you too. Okay, Tina.
Bye. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to see if apparently a caller came back. Well, Justin, we're going to try. I'm going to give this third caller one more try, Justin.
Okay.
Area code. Now, this is the third time that they have come and gone.
Hmm.
Okay? So, 3, 2, 1. Okay, that's over.
Okay.
So here's what I want to know. I would like for you to name, I know you can't name all of them, but just name some of the major people, artists, that you have interviewed.
By major, you mean like just
Well, you like to
fame-wise?
Like Reeby, like, no, don't not necessarily fame-wise.
Oh, okay.
But,
well, God,
yeah.
There's so many. Let's see.
Just a few. I know there are many.
Stacey Ladislaw, Evelyn Champagne King, Billy Ocean. Let's see, Melissa Manchester, Jonathan Butler.
Oh, I love Jonathan Butler.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome. I just got his new Christmas album, which is awesome. The 3 Degrees, just did that interview recently for their 50th anniversary. Suzy Green, who was part of the post-Diamond Supreme. Supremes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Lisa Fisher, Linda Clifford, Selma Houston, let's see. Oh, the list goes on. As far as some of the more newer acts, which I've done on occasion, I've also interviewed, which is kind of a change of pace, some artists like Sean Garrett, like the songwriter of Usher's Yeah, and things like that, and even Jason Derulo, which that was interesting because that was a very different kind of interview. But also, I can't forget Peaches and I interviewed Herb from Peaches and Herb, and that was a really cool interview. Leroy Burgess, Eugene Wilde, Melissa Morgan, Raina Scott, Viola Will, she's no longer with us, but was a good friend of mine. I had the chance to interview her.
You know, that is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Just you know, the fact that you actually interviewed these people and they are such an important part of music. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it's history at its height. Now, I know that you love to go and dig up old records. You posted a picture of yourself. I think you were in New York and you had found an album called As Is by Wren Woods. By Wren Woods, it was produced by Chuck Jackson. I also wrote a couple of songs on that album and did the background vocals. And I'm like, now nobody but Justin would find that album.
Well,
how does it feel to just go and you know, when you go digging through those crates or go to these different record stores, are you looking for anything in particular or just whatever gem you happen to find?
You know, I was very fortunate when I went to Berkeley, being in Boston, at the time there was a plethora of used record shops there that I would frequent on the weekends. And, you know, growing up, as I mentioned, I would spend a lot of time on the weekends at record stores, but it wasn't to the extent that there was in Boston. And I just discovered so much great music just by taking a chance. You know, it's true. A lot of times the art, the album art is so important too, because it's what catches your eye. And so a lot of times based on how an album cover appealed to me, and then of course also looking at the credits on the back and if I notice writers or arrangers that their names were familiar. You know, some record stores it's nice because you can sample things. But a lot of times I didn't really even have that opportunity. They were just fortunately priced reasonably, and I took a chance. And I, like something like Rin Woods, originally I had got that record you're speaking of as is when I was in college. And it's funny because you know how you discover things over the years you didn't know, because my favorite song from that was Higher Love, which then, of course, I realized when I was researching for the interview I did with you a few years ago that you had written that song with Larry Batiste, I think. And, you know, so it's just, there's no rhyme or reason sometimes. It's, I will say, though, one thing I should mention when you asked this question is that when I was growing up, I read Billboard magazine religiously, and consequently, I started utilizing some of the Billboard reference books that were published, and I would just comb through those and read about all these artists and the songs that had charted that I never heard of, and I would go seek them out. So if anything, maybe that was sort of what led me to discovering a lot of those unearthed treasures, if you will, you know, like the lesser known things, as I would just discover music that way through reading about them in these reference books. And then from there, you know, it just kind of spiraled, because you'd see one artist or producer name on an album, and then you pick up another record and you see the name, and you think, I liked what they did on, you know, like on Rin Wood's album, so let me hear what they did on this album, you know, and that kind of thing. I remember I found, you know, your solo album, She's Back and Ready, at a record store in Boston that was right down the street from our campus, and the name of the record store is escaping me at the moment, but, you know, it's just like you never know. I didn't know your history at that point with Grand Central Station. That was all new to me. But I just remember, like, when I put it on, like, the first song that really stood out to me was the song Questions that you wrote, because that was, like, I think really indicative of what I was. I had a lot of questions about my life at that point, you know, in college, while trying to find something.
Right.
It's just kind of amazing how you just take a chance on something, and, you know, little did I have no idea that, you know, like, some 10, 15 years later, I'd be talking with you at length and reading your book and all this great stuff. I mean, it's awesome.
I know. It really is awesome. And the thing I like about you is you'll email me and you say, I didn't realize that you say, I think the last time you did it was, you said, Chocolate, I didn't realize that you sang with Angela Cole. Angela Cole, and she was on Motown doing the background. And I'm like, shoot, I didn't realize it either.
Mona Lisa's
awesome. So, you know, you dig up stuff, because, you know, I've been doing this all my life, and I've been on so many different people's projects, and you just forget. So, you know, and so there you are, coming up with these gems, you know, bringing them back to my memory. It's like, oh, man. Send it to me, Justin, so I can listen to it. And you send it to me, and I hear it. It is great. It is awesome. I love it. So, unfortunately, I wish I could talk to you all night, but this has to come to an end. But before it does, I just would like to know if you could tell me what do you think about the difference between true school music, okay, and the music of today? I mean, I know that's a deep question. Try to make it brief if you can. But what differences do you find in it?
Well, I think that there is some true school music today. I think it's just not always in a lot of people's radar because it doesn't get the exposure. But I know what you're saying. In general, the music of today is not true school. So I would say the true school music, there's a natural human factor that can be found in the melody, the arrangement, and the performance, you know, both vocally and musically. A lot of music today, I would say, is more manufactured based on trends and pieced together not so organically. It's more of piecemeal based on this was popular there and this is what this age group wants to hear and this is what this audience responds to. So what you get often in the end is a product that, it's a product instead of a song, and it might be temporarily satiating, but I don't think in the long run that it will hold up in people's hearts so much and that they'll think, oh, this is a song that really has made a difference in my life and how I feel about certain events, you know.
Right,
it's a different
right.
ear candy and heart, well, I don't want to say heart candy, but, you know, but soul, just like soul fulfillment, I guess, the difference between soul fulfillment and just ear candy without that, I guess.
Okay. And I understand that, so I'm sure everybody else does. I understand exactly what you're saying. So what advice would you give as somebody that is truly a musicologist, has made it a lot since they were 2 years old, been listening to music, has been a large part, you know, music has been a major part of your life. You know, so just speaking not from an artist perspective, but from somebody who has studied music, music is their life, what advice would you give up-and-coming artists today?
Just from the perspective of being someone who loves music, you mean?
Right.
I would say, honestly, that is a really hard question. I think first is to have as solid an idea as possible about who you are as an artist, as in what generally is the style of music that you like to perform, what really brings out the best in you performance-wise and the best in you range-wise and really shows off your strengths. I think you have to think of that having precedence over what's the popular thing at the moment, because I think in the long run, even if you might not sell as many records, I think you'll have a more committed audience because they'll know you for who you are and what you stand for. There'll be a thread that runs through your catalog of songs that you do, as opposed to if you just kind of go with the trend each time, you kind of hit or miss, and you might have lots of people one day knocking on your door and then suddenly no one's interested because they never got a feel for who you really were in the first place. So that would be the main thing I would say.
Okay, well, that's good advice. You're right. And basically you're saying be true to yourself. And so I would ask you if you have any shout-outs, but I think everybody, you've gotten a call all the way from Singapore, so I think you probably don't have any, you know, anybody that's not listening to you or your friends right now. They're probably all tuning in. But as far as I'm concerned, I would like to say, for all things chocolate, go to PatriceChocolateBanks.com. I want to shout out my family, my husband, my daughter, my mama. I want to I don't have time enough to say the many things that I would love to say about Nelson Mandela and about his passing, but he will be somebody that has made a mark For all time. So, really it was a blessing that he was on this earth, period. I want to say shout out all my Facebook family, Team Chocolate, and basically BBJ, who is the producer and owner of TribeFamilyChannel.com, and who else? There's so many, but don't have time. Want to say may the funk be with all of y'all. God bless you. And we're going to go out on this last tune on your list. We had to skip one, but this one sounds like, this one sounds good. I haven't heard it. Don't know who these people are, but it must be good if you put it on your list. It's called Time for Some Fun. It's called Central Line. And Justin, I just want to thank you so much, and we're going to have to do a part two for sure, because I know, because it's a lot of stuff that we miss, but we tried to fit as much of it in as we possibly could, and I think we did a pretty good job.
Absolutely. I'm very grateful to you. Thank you so much for the opportunity and the Tribe Family Channel. I'm very appreciative of the chance to talk about what I do. So much appreciated.
It was my pleasure. And Gumbo for the Soul, thank you very much. And we're going to go out on Time for Some Fun by Central Line. Somebody else I got a YouTube.
Awesome.
Smooches.
Bye.
Bye.